Mysteries of the Middle Ages and the Beginning of the Modern World. This is the latest in the Hinges of History to which Thomas Cahill is treating us. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, Thomas Cahill. I just don't want to leave this Latin business for just a minute. I had forgotten, if I ever knew, the origins of Latin, the Roman, the Latin Quarter, this is leaping way forward, in Paris,
yeah,
is because the students read in Latin. Oh!
Well, it's called the Latin Quarter because the students spoke Latin to one another because they came from different parts of Europe, and that was the only common language that they had.
And the vernacular was everything else and hadn't really been codified yet.
Well, it was beginning to be, but in any case, someone who spoke Parisian French could only communicate with someone from Holland by Latin.
It was the lingua franca, as you say, with a grin in the middle. You gotta laugh your way through some of this. I say that because these could sound, the word I tried out was arcane. This could sound like whole dead dusty stuff, but it isn't. This is very much current in our present experience. As I was reading through how mysterious some of these things are, the mysteries, I kept thinking, my goodness, look at this. This is so current. And every once in a while, you'll come through and say, imagine Philip the Fair, who is this, 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 and this. And Philip the Fair, let's see, he's in France. Well, you're talking about all the ways that a good Christian leader of a nation can go wrong.
Yeah.
And it feels very current.
Yeah.
So your ability to bring...
Well, Philip the Fair is almost startling in the parallels between him and our current...
George Bush.
Leader.
George W. Bush.
In reading that, and I'm sure it was not altogether unintentional, I thought you had lapsed into some anachronism.
I too.
All of a sudden you were, you picked up a column, you were writing for a current newspaper, because the description, is just dead on.
How to go very, very wrong.
Well, how to go wrong, but basically how to say blind self-righteousness.
Yeah.
And all that goes with it.
Yeah.
And we could have learned from that, but didn't.
Yeah.
And again, as you're talking about these things, I kept thinking, oh, why didn't we learn that then?
The one thing that history never does is repeat itself exactly, but history is nonetheless full of lessons for us if we bother to look at them.
Or if we know the history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again and again, there are things happening to us now that we could shed light on by looking at history.
Part of the charm to me of your personalizing, because these people, as people, become much more recognizable. The differences between them and us are minor. They're reacting to pressures that are different pressures, but they're pressures. You know, they're physical pressures, they're intellectual pressures, they're spiritual pressures, and opportunities.
Economic.
All the things that are familiar. So the categories are there. The particulars vary. But the opportunity to learn from each of these individuals dealing with those challenges and opportunities is, as much as anything, what makes this so much fun.
Fun, yeah.
Well, why not?
and a case in point is...
Excellent point.
A case in point is this wonderful cover that is a picture of Assisi. And, and you give me a wonderful visit with St. Francis, whom you hold in the very highest possible. Let's see, that would be Jesus, St. Francis, and who? You said one of two or three in the course of the last many thousands of years.
Well, certainly for many people, Francis is the greatest Christian figure after Jesus, until his time, which is the 13th century. But in each era of the world, in each era of the West, certainly, things have happened that have continued on and become part of us and that we would not want to be without. And the three great things that I mention in Mysteries of the Middle Ages and track are feminism, science, and art. Feminism is really born in the Middle Ages, surprise, surprise, but there you are. It never existed before.
Since the hunter-gatherer days.
Well, We don't know too much about
the documentation
about
those. is a little weak on that.
No, guys.
That's prehistory, is it not?
Indeed.
So we know very little about it.
At least from the beginning of agriculture, we really don't know that that ever... That's a long time.
Yeah, I would go right back to the beginning. I don't buy what I think you're referring to.
I don't know.
About, earth goddesses and all that being more important.
I'm simply saying what we know and think about typically excludes our first 200,000 years, 180,000 years of human experience.
In the course of history, feminism as a separate experience, something that can really be referred to, really emerges for the first time in the Middle Ages.
Which is to say women have different opportunities? What do you mean by feminism?
I mean that women, for the first time, women are taken seriously in the same way that men are taken seriously. Not all women.
Well, not all
men. The time, or anything remotely like that. But you have female figures for the first time running the ship.
Mm-hmm. Like?
Being in charge. The two that I point out, but there are many of them, are the secular figure is Eleanor of Aquitaine, who's really a great...
she's great.
She's just a wonderful person to write about. That's all. She gets married at 15 to Louis of France. She becomes Queen of France. She decides that Louis is really a drag, and she wrangles an annulment, and she marries Henry II, who's a real catch, who was king not only of England but of today's France,
and she brought a good chunk of it with her too.
Yes, she did. She's so much fun to write about.
And she's not just some girl from the country. She is sort of the quintessence of this romantic ideal. So she comes in with a incredible character as well.
Yeah. She's a great reader. She's a great patron of the arts and of literature. She particularly likes all the stories about King Arthur and his court. And we sometimes wonder how much Guinevere is really Eleanor of Aquitaine, and how much Eleanor of Aquitaine is really Guinevere. It's very hard to work it out. You can't, actually. There's not enough. We don't have enough evidence. But there is a connection between those two figures, without any question.
So she's the secular woman.
And then the Hildegard of Bingen is the religious figure. She's one of the great Rhineland abbesses, and she's also a knockout in her own way. I mean, she could do just about everything. She was actually a great composer of music, an excellent poet, a very good writer, a mystic who saw things that nobody else saw and wrote down her visions. She was a visionary. She was, to all intents and purposes, a medical doctor. She wrote medical treatises, and they're pretty good, I mean, they were as good as anything else that was produced in the Middle Ages. A lot of it is useless to us, but nonetheless, she was, certainly for an abbess, extremely frank about sexual matters. She got away with just about anything she wanted to get away with. She told off the emperor repeatedly. I always say, she would have been happy to give her advice to our current president.
Whether he wanted it or not.
Yeah, and he would have been hard-pressed to ignore her. As the emperor was, as everybody was. She told off the pope. She said he was a silly old man and he should retire.
What you're describing is a Renaissance woman, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is before... This is the 12th century
that's
Renaissance.
That's the point, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's this is the limited sense of history we have, that the Renaissance sprung full-grown from the head of, a bunch of people in northern Italy, which is pretty good PR.
These are the precursors of the Renaissance.
Exactly.
These are the people. What always interests me is the drama of origination. How did something get underway in the first place? Well, the third, in addition to feminism, you have science and art taking off again. It isn't as if science and art were being invented. The Greek treatises are rediscovered. They're translated into Latin, which people read much more widely than anything else. And then you have this flourishing of the arts, this burgeoning of the arts.
We'll come back with the arts and science in just a moment with Thomas Cahill, who is opening all sorts of mysteries for us of the Middle Ages, early Middle Ages, leading to other exciting things, all of which are incredibly relevant. We hope that you'll be with us to continue the adventure in just a moment. Yeah.